This is 101.3, The Game. It's now time for Sports Saturday.
Are you serious, really?
On 101.3, The Game.
I know football.
Sports Saturday is powered in part by Green City Garage, an environmentally responsible garage in South Burlington, working on all makes and models and specializing in your family's car, truck, or SUV. Vermont Engine Service, an engine and machine shop that also does small engine repair. 16 Krupp Drive in Williston. Vermont Mortgage Company. Mortgage expertise dedicated to Vermonters. See how easy obtaining a mortgage can be. And Romanto's Pizza, delivering to a 10-mile radius of their Taft Corners, Williston location. This is Sports Saturday.
Yet another missed tackle.
Living the dream and taking you with us. 101.3, The Game.
Oh, he's not lying. He's not lying. We are living the dream and taking you with us. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. I'm your host, Jeff Paul. And sitting to my right, I introduce to the city of Burlington, across the lake to Plattsburgh, and anyone that can hear us around the world, because we are on 101.3 The Game on the app, our good friend from Boston, Bobby Krivitsky's in the house. Bobby, good morning, my man.
Going on? Appreciate you guys having me.
Long trip coming up here from Boston to do the show. Pretty exciting stuff.
Last 40 minutes, the legs get a little itchy, ready to get out of the car and stretch, but I'm here.
It's a hop, skip, and a jump, though, really.
Easy drive.
I mean, it really is an easy drive. A lot to see.
A scenic drive, which helps.
You got that great little shop and stop right before you get over the border into Vermont. You can stop and get yourself some tax-free liquor in New Hampshire if you need to do that. You know what I mean? Get yourself something to eat over there.
It's on the mind for the ride
home. You know
what
I mean? They always stop there on the way up and way back. I know that's a hot spot for my family in Maine. So my mother and father-in-law live in Bangor, Maine, and we always have to stop for the Black Velvet Whiskey because it's much cheaper there on our way up the Bangor, Maine. So I know that's a very important stop.
If I came home empty-handed, my friends would never forgive me.
655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation today, 802-655-6672. Or you can text us on the Town Fair Tire text line, same number, 802-655-6672. Bobby, you have some story here, man. I mean, people that aren't going to know you up here. You're a Boston native. You're from Boston, Syracuse graduate. But boy, you're 27 years old. But man, you've done a lot of stuff.
Appreciate that. Yeah. So just to give everyone my background real quick, little spiel. When I graduated from Syracuse, I went to work as an NFL and NBA columnist for Bleacher Report.
Favorite app, by the way.
It's phenomenal.
I mean, that is my go-to app is Bleacher Report. And first thing I read every morning.
And now they've grown where they're pumping out great video content as well. Like, for anyone who's a huge NBA junkie like myself, they put out a series, Game of Zones. Obviously, you know, a parody of Game of Thrones built off the NBA season and all the ridiculous shenanigans that go on. I'm telling you, if you love the NBA like I do, check it out because it's fantastic content.
Now, is that the same type of thing that they do with the NFL City? You know, there's like a cartoon series that Bleacher Report puts out, and it's like I don't remember what it's called, but it emulates like the NFL players that are living in some NFL city, and it's pretty cute, actually.
Yeah, there are a lot of parallels.
Yeah, okay.
But definitely, if you like Thrones and you like the NBA.
Yeah. Are you a Thrones guy?
Of course.
See, I haven't been able to get into that show.
So you've watched it and didn't
I've
like
tried.
It.
I mean, I've tried to get into it. Like, I've got friends that, I mean, everybody loves it. I mean, everybody, I've got friends that are like, you got to watch the show. And a couple seasons ago, I tried. But I can't.
That's all I can ask.
I'm a Walking Dead guy myself.
Interesting.
I'm very into The Walking Dead. And I don't like zombies, but the storylines in that show are just insane. I'm all wrapped up in that stuff.
Interesting.
So but I can't get into the Throne stuff.
So my next stop from Bleacher Report was IMG Audio, which is headquartered in Winston-Salem, but it runs broadcasts for radio stations all across the country. And one of my roommates, as a side note, huge Walking Dead fan.
Okay.
And so it was me and two other guys, and only one of us loves The Walking Dead. But when I say loves it, I mean,
obsessed.
He would skip work to watch an episode. There's no doubt in my mind.
I'm not like that.
And so we could hear his reaction on Sunday nights, two episodes. So it's like, I don't know any of the characters' names. I don't know anything that's ever happened in that series. But I know if it's a good episode or a bad episode based on his reaction.
Yeah, well, it's a crazy show. But enough of that. Enough of these ridiculous shows. Keep going about with you, man. This is a crazy story.
So IMG is a company that will run broadcasts of college athletics across the country. And they have most of the top D1 schools. So it's cool because what I would do is I would host the broadcast for the pregame, the halftime, the postgame show, and also run it as the producer. So you could be on two major markets in one day working two games where, for example, one of the schools that I would always work is Boston College. You've got friends and family listening, texting you, hey, I hear you on the air right now. Nice job. Or, yeah, that wasn't so hot. And then you could go and do a Georgia
Bulldog. Hold on a minute. So a family member would text you and be like, hey, you got it. That's not good. I mean, that's just, I mean, if any of my family did that to me on the air, I'd be sweating like crazy.
Well, you know, you got people who like to critique you.
It's good. It's good.
You know, my mom, I've never made a mistake in my life in her eyes.
Of course.
But other people
she's
are
the go-to.
A little, other people text you or they tweet at you and they're a little harsher.
All right, fair enough.
So you learn, you know, it's all in good nature though.
Of course.
And so it's cool. And then you do something like you go from a BC game to a Georgia Bulldogs football game.
Oh, yeah.
And they live and breathe that thing.
Well, let me ask you this. So you've obviously seen the best and the worst of SEC football. And we living up here in the Northeast, the SEC is portrayed as that's it, the big dog of the big dogs. You know what I mean? You're talking about Alabama, you're talking about Georgia, you're talking about Auburn, you're talking about LSU. The list goes on. Is it really as passionate as it's portrayed to be down there?
I would say from someone's perception in the Northeast, it's probably more passionate than you think it is, for as passionate as you may think that it is. So you can sit there and say, yeah, I get it. But when you experience it, especially, I've never been in person to an SEC football game, but even just running a broadcast, it smacks you in the face.
Sure.
So being there in the stadium, and we're talking football here, basketball, you know, it's coming up as a conference, but it's still just so far behind where football is, where some of these cities, they don't have a professional team. Alabama football, that's it.
That's it.
The show.
Yeah.
So it's every day, it's year round, and it's they live and breathe it.
And the passion their fans have. I mean, I talked to you last night a little bit just to get to know you a little bit before you came on the show, and you were talking about the Georgia fans that are ready to just blow up Athens when they lose a football game. Like, break the team down, get them out of here, get the coach out of here. I mean, it's serious stuff.
Oh, yeah. If they lose, cancel the Bulldogs. I'm not coming into work tomorrow. I need two full days. I need Sunday and Monday to recover.
Yep.
And then I'll consider Tuesday. We'll see where I'm at. It's touch and go.
I guess we're kind of all like that, though. You know what I mean? Your team, like, you look at that as a Yankee fan, there's plenty of times where I'm like, enough of this. Get rid of these guys. Let's bring some new people in here. But then the next day, you love them again. You know that.
Well, last year in the first round of the NCAA tournament,
be quiet.
I thought you weren't going to come into work.
You know I'm going to come into work, buddy.
I wasn't sure.
Ride or die with my Wahoo Wahs, baby.
I did know that if you did, I had a montage waiting for you.
I know you did. I know. You and Bernie. Just annoying.
See, when you get to be in front of the microphone, it's like a therapy session. You could come in and just vent. I'd be itching to get to work.
I have to tell you this, though. When Virginia got knocked out last year in the first round, it was a Friday night, and we had this show the next morning, and my co-host at the time, Bernie Siblicki, one of my best friends in the world, and my buddy over here, Aaron Wells, had a montage set up for me. I mean, and I was borderline tears getting here because I was had a hard time. I woke up thinking I had just had the worst nightmare of my life, and I came in here to deal with these two jamokes, along with all the listeners that were just bashing me all day because of my Virginia Cavaliers. So, however, let me just say this. I mean, right now, you can say what you want. You know what I mean? I mean, we're national champs. Mic drop. You know what I'm saying, Aaron? You know what I mean? I haven't noticed a montage for my Cavaliers for winning a national championship. I haven't seen that yet.
No, we only put that much work in when it bothers you.
Enough. Enough of you.
That's what friends are for.
Exactly. Yeah, right. Or, yeah, these kind of friends.
So, from IMG, I pivoted and started to get into both television and digital media. So, the first thing I did was I covered the Celtics last year as a multimedia journalist on site. That's just a fancy egotistical way of saying that you shoot the thing, you edit it, and you're also on air. So that was a lot of fun, and getting to be around a professional locker room.
Sure.
You hear some interesting commentary in there, especially after a win when guys are juiced up and maybe they've got the day off. They don't have to travel right away.
Right.
So things get high energy.
Yeah, I bet it does.
A lot of fun comments, and it was great to be around that atmosphere and to cover professional basketball up close, because it's easy to sit there and watch it on TV and say, wow, they're big, they're strong, they're athletic, they're fast. When you're right there and it's in front of your face, there's nothing like it. They are the most impressive athletes in the world. And you see them, like Giannis Antetokounmpo, for example, you see him take two strides and dunk it from the three-point line. It's just, it's mesmerizing.
Yeah. It is. And now you're full circle as you're sitting here in Burlington, Vermont with me.
Correct.
I mean, does it get any better than that, really?
It's been a steady progression.
I'm glad that's back here because there's so much to talk about. We have some show today that Robbie and I are going to bring to you. Mark Murphy of the Boston Herald, we're going to talk Celtics with him. You're front and center with the Celtics last season. I've been arguing that this year's team is nothing like last year's team. Last year's team was so much fun to root for. I love the head coach, Brad Stevens. I love the storylines. Even not being a Celtic fan, I became a part Celtic fan last last year because of this group of guys. Kyrie Irving adopting LeBron James' philosophy of running a basketball team has ruined what I believe a really good opportunity for the Celtics, but they've looked really good these first three games against Indiana. You were around the team last year. Do you see a difference in these Celtics?
So I don't want to pretend like I had anything more than a glimpse into what Kyrie was like in his relationship with the guys
on
the team.
No. I'm not asking that. I'm asking you saw the team close up last season. You saw what this team was made of last season.
But last season, I thought that he operated completely differently from a leadership perspective, from interacting with the guys. And maybe that was just, this is my first year. I want to get comfortable. I want to be a good soldier. And this year it's, okay, well, now I can, you know, really let my shields down. And it hasn't been to the benefit a lot of times of the Celtics and his teammates. But to me, last year, the chemistry was great. And I liked the way that he helped lead this team.
Well, but he allowed Brad Stevens to lead this team. I mean, I thought last year Brad Stevens was the reason the Celtics were so successful to me. With all the injuries that they faced early in the season, being written off in terms of being able to win a championship and be able to do what they did, it was such great team basketball, which you don't see in the NBA very much right now. I'm sad to see where the Celtics... Now, listen, I'm rooting for them. I love Brad Stevens. I hope that they're successful. I hope that there's a run here for them. But I'm hoping that there is. I'm not sold on it yet.
So the coach matters, but it's not like football where Bill Belichick can take a bunch of C-level players and coach them up to a B. Yes, the system that Brad Stevens has, that helped, but the guys bought in, including Kyrie.
You just said it, but that's why the coach is important. You just said it. They bought in. And to me, at times this season, this Celtic team has not bought in. That you've had a guy like Kyrie Irving in the front of this, like the head of the snake so mentality, that if it's not working out for him, he's not happy. He's calling people out. He's calling the coach out. That's a problem.
So there's a difference between not buying into the system and at times having a complaint, which have often been warranted about things Brad Stevens has done incorrectly or to the detriment of the team. That's different than not buying into the system. And no coach obviously is perfect.
Right.
This, to me, is about expectations from the fan base and the media to individuals themselves. We looked at it collectively and thought, okay, well, now they're adding Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving to a team that was one game from going to the NBA Finals, one historically bad shooting night from going to the NBA Finals. But the reality is that Jason Tatum grew up faster than had been planned. Same with Jaylen Brown. And so now these guys, Terry Rozier included, they look at it and say, wait, you want me to do what now? You want me to take how many steps back? Terry Rozier, you want me to come off the bench? Jaylen Brown gets out there at the start of the season. We're going to talk to Mark Murphy in a little bit. He didn't know where his place was in the starting lineup. He looked like a deer in the headlights, just trying to keep up and figure out, where am I in the pecking order now? And these are guys, it's much easier to sacrifice when you bring in Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen towards the end of their careers, and it's, okay, we have the individual accolades, we've had big contracts, we just want to win a ring. Jaylen Brown is still on his rookie contract, and it's coming to an end in 2 years. He wants to carve out his place in the league. He hasn't had a chance to do that yet. Jason Tatum, you've been in the NBA for 1 year, and everyone's tabbing you as this young, up-and-coming potential superstar. You want to keep on that track, but what you're asked to do for the good of the team is to sacrifice and keep the distribution even. And remember, Kyrie Irving is one of these top 10 players. He is the guy.
And I agree. I agree to some extent, and we'll get into this. We're going to talk to Mark Murphy next segment. That does bring us up to our Green City Garage poll question today. The Green City Garage located at 49B Commerce Ave, Unit 5 in South Burlington, Vermont, 05403. Phone number 802-651-9299. Let me just tell you something. And you don't know me yet too well, but like I know nothing about automobiles. And sometimes going to garages can be very intimidating. Not at Green City Garage. Even the dumbest questions that I have, like, how do I put my, you know, my windshield wiper on? How do I turn the heat off? Things like that. You know what I mean? Like things that normal people know. He answers those questions for you and more. Chris Qualls is the best. He's a Green City Garage, and it's an environmentally friendly garage, if I can say that correct, as well, located in South Burlington, Vermont. The Vermont Green City Garage poll question today is this Celtic team the one we've been waiting for? Text yes at 101.3 the game at Twitter. Answer the question yes. If yes, NBA championship, here we come. Or no, they're just better than Indiana. Text us right now. Go to that website right now. Go to the Twitter, our Twitter handle, 101.3. I can't even talk today, man. Go to Twitter right now, 101.3 The Game, and answer that for us, and we'll see what the fans out there think. But I'm with you on some aspects of the Celtics. I think that I agree with that. But to me, looking at this team overall, and I get the mentality of the personal mentality, when I start seeing guys like Kyrie Irving, and I'm going to use him exactly, calling the coach out in public, calling players out in public, pouting publicly, that I think takes a toll on a young basketball team. And last year, with all the maybe the non-expectation after losing in the early in the season, you know, after losing those athletes early in the season, I thought it galvanized them and turned them into a real powerhouse. When bringing in these two superstars was going to take them over the top. We'll see, though, because I will say this about the Celtics. Last night, they looked like a championship-level basketball team to me. Late in the game, Indiana comes back, but they made big shots. They seem to be playing well together. I liked what I saw late last night. I mean, I don't know. That's just me.
To me, they cannot play the way they're playing against the Pacers and expect to beat the Bucks. Different series, different,
very true.
Different style of play. They're not going to play these two teams the same way.
Right.
But they have to be better. This is hopefully comparable to the Patriots using the last 3 weeks of the regular season against teams that just are outgunned to develop and build habits and build fundamentals to work off of come playoff time.
Right.
Hopefully this is what the Celtics are doing against Indiana to prepare them for the next round.
Well, we will see, because the Celtics are one game away from moving on, and we talk to the Boston Herald's Mark Murphy. Don't go anywhere when we get back.
Phone lines are now open. Call 802-655-6672. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
The Celtics are one game away from moving on to the second round of the NBA playoffs. Something I think we all expected. I am Jeff Paul, your host here on Sports Saturday. Bobby Krivitsky, the Bobby B. Bobby Krivitsky with us today from Boston. Bobby, it's awesome to have you here, man.
Appreciate it. I'm loving the hospitality.
And I got to tell you, man, I mean, you are knowledgeable, too. I mean, when it comes to the Celtic talk, man, I mean, you are, you know, kind of mic dropping me over here. You know, here I am just jumping all over Kyrie Irving and the ridiculousness of what I'm seeing out of these Boston Celtics. And you're actually giving me the reason why. And that's why you, my friend, are a professional. And I do this once a week.
No, plenty of valid points on your end as well. Don't sell yourself short.
I appreciate that. Thanks for the pat on the back. I do appreciate it. I'm not used to that on this show.
I got your back.
But who better to talk to about the Boston Celtics than our great friend from the Boston Herald, Celtic writer Mark Murphy, joins us right now in the TikTok Jewelers guest line. Good morning, Mark. How you doing today, buddy?
Good, guys. Little droopy after last night, but yeah, fine.
Well, before we get into the Celtics, communicating the other day, we were talking that you actually have some ties here to Vermont, right?
Yeah, my daughter graduated from UVM in 2015. She was web editor of the Cynic, so yeah, we used to use her being up there as a great excuse to go visit one of our favorite cities.
Oh, very kind of you to say. And listen, the Cynic is a big deal. So that another level of Murphy in giving us some stuff to read. That's good stuff.
Yeah. Although she's doing the serious stuff. She's doing politics and news.
Oh, boy. I don't know if that's serious or not. All right, Mark, let's get right into this team. The Celtics last night, I thought, showed a little bit of grit late in the game. The Indiana Pacers got themselves within, I think, 2 or 3 points late in the game, but Kyrie Irving and the guys kind of took the game over. What'd you see last night down in Indianapolis?
In a way, more of the same. I mean, you know, the one thing about Indiana, ever since they lost Oladipo, the only way they can really stay in games is to muck it up. They are a top three defensive team. Their offense is pretty negligible, but the way they make up for it is by turning it into an ugly game. And actually, I think from the Celtics standpoint, that's one thing they haven't always been able to do is grind out wins this year. So I consider this a bit of an improvement. They're winning ugly. Even without Marcus Smart.
This team last night, late in the game, I thought what I was impressed with was there was no panic, and Kyrie really took the game over late in the fourth quarter. Are we starting to see a turn? You haven't heard us talk about the Celtics much this year, I'm sure, but one of the things that I've been upset about the Celtics is I just felt like they didn't have the toughness or the grit like they've had last season going into the playoffs. Did we see something that we can expect will continue going on throughout the playoffs with them?
Yeah, I think, you know, for one thing, you're seeing Kyrie finally in his element all year. He's been saying, well, just get me to the playoffs. Let's stop talking about the regular season. I think you're starting to see what he meant by that. He's just making, he's good for a game winner every night. I mean, that's who he is. That's why you got him. But the thing that has impressed me is the secondary guys are starting to step up. Jaylen Brown has had a great series. Tatum was terrific in game two. Al Horford continues to work this really cool two-man game with Kyrie. You saw it with those two-way jump shots from Horford last night, you know, both off pick and rolls with Kyrie. So I think they're starting to develop some pretty good chemistry after a year where, you know, they had anything but that.
Mark, following game two, you wrote about Jaylen Brown's growth. He's gone from someone who in the beginning of the season couldn't find his place in the starting lineup. And last night, he's closing the game with that same group he started the season with. And at the end of the first quarter, he had a game-high 12 points, and he helped set the tone for the Celtics.
He did. And and last year in the playoffs, without Kyrie, without Hayward, he was second on the team in scoring. He was scoring 18 a game. And he seems to have that aggression again now. But what he's doing is he's also been guarding Bogdanović, which is the toughest assignment on the other side. And without Smart, he's emerged as the best Celtics' best defensive wing in this series. He's having a great season. Series, and you know, I think Tatum's starting to come along.
Yeah, Tatum and Jaylen Brown have both been terrific and very encouraging here in the postseason. Jaylen, you know, we've seen that from both of them, the promise and the either strong performance at one end of the floor, but not the other, or sometimes a complete game. But seeing them step it up in the postseason is certainly encouraging for the Celtics and for their fans. I've seen some Celtics fans joke around on Twitter, is Jason Tatum a 16-game player, meaning playoffs compared to the 82-game grind of the regular season? Someone who has been a little bit underwhelming to start the playoffs is Gordon Hayward. He's averaging 9.7 points per game, 5.7 rebounds, and 1.7 assists. He hasn't performed at the level he was at the end of the season, which was a talking point about the Celtics going into the playoffs was, well, if Gordon Hayward is starting to come back and play like this, it raises the Celtics' ceiling. How much of his quote-unquote struggles to start the playoffs are about him versus the coaching staff and his teammates?
I think what he's going through right now is he's your backup playmaker. I mean, he's basically, because Terry Rozier isn't really a point guard. I mean, those duties are falling onto Hayward, and he's actually keeping them connected. I mean, part of it is just the rough nature of the series, and Indiana's ability to muck it up has probably impacted his numbers a little bit as well. But if you look at the score of all these games, I mean, they're all low-scoring games. It's maybe one, two guys who are going to have big scoring nights. I think he's actually been pretty good running the offense, which sometimes is what he settles into. If they end up playing Milwaukee, that's going to be a slightly different series. But I think it changes from series to series. I don't think he's struggled. I think he's actually played pretty well.
We're talking to Celtic beat writer for the Boston Herald, Mark Murphy, here on Sports Saturday and 101.3 The Game. All right, Mark, listen, all season long, we've been debating this all season long, this Celtic team last year to this year. Give me an idea mentality-wise where this Celtic team was at this point last season to where they are this year right now.
Well, these guys had to go through a season on the couch, so to speak, just trying to figure out who they were, and guys readapting to lesser roles, Rozier going back to the bench and having trouble with it. I think Tatum, looking back, had a lot of trouble going from the lead option in the playoffs to suddenly being second banana to Kyrie. And I think he actually suffered a little bit in terms of his ability to take over games. He was suddenly number two to Kyrie, and I think he's starting to figure that out. He's looked like a different player in the playoffs, but he's I thought he had kind of a disappointing year, too.
I don't get. See, this is what I don't get. This is where I get lost, okay? You know, you're trying to win a championship, and it's like this guy's having a hard time being the second band of this guy, and this guy's having a hard time being on the bench. Hey, you know, when do you have to put it all behind you and say, we have a really good chance here to win, and you just play the game and figure it out? I mean, that's where I'm lost with all of this with the Celtics. We have a team last year that loses had the injuries that they had, and they over-exemplified what I thought team basketball was. The whole reason I went away from the NBA was because of what I see this year. The reason I came back to the NBA is because of what I saw with the Celtics last year. Now we go forward to a team that's loaded on paper and should be successful. But because egos are in the way, we can't have the team that we expect to have. I don't get any of that stuff.
Well, I think part of it was immaturity with certain guys. Talked to Jaylen Brown a couple of weeks ago about just his, you know, everything he's gone through. And he admitted that he had to go through this period. You know, he was sent back to the bench after the first 20 games of the season. And he struggled. He didn't really know Gordon too well. Those two have since developed a pretty good chemistry. But, you know, Rozier goes back to the bench, and Rozier has the extra factor of being in a contract year. And he's thinking, well, I get a play for my next contract, and here I am, I'm not starting. And the problem with Terry is he keeps telling himself, well, on any other team, I'd be a starter, but I'm playing behind Kyrie Irving. And he started feeling sorry for himself a little bit. And that affected his game. All of a sudden, during those horrible stretches of the season, you see Terry just forcing up shots. The energy part of his game went down. I think that's all starting to come back now. You know, Marcus Morris, I mean, after a great start, he sort of, you know, went into a funk, went into a shooting swamp.
Is that a direct correlation of the fight he had on the sideline with his teammates?
I think what he's also going into a contract here. He he's a new father. I mean, all this stuff plays in these guys' heads.
Yeah.
They're thinking about their future. And Morris and Rozier both probably cost themselves some money this year.
Yeah.
And, you know, they deny that's in near the front of their minds, but it probably is. And like I said earlier, I think Tatum had trouble sort of recalibrating things when he had to share the floor with Kyrie.
Yeah.
So, you know, all that stuff is starting to come back and into focus now. I think that since maybe the last 2 weeks of the season, they've figured something out. People, I think, look at this series against Indiana, see the low scores, and think, well, you know, how hard can it be to beat a team that doesn't even have Victor Oladipo on it? But again, back to what I said before, I mean, that's the way Indiana plays. It's more of a 90s slugfest than a modern game.
Mark, I'm glad you went there, because that leads perfectly into what my next question was going to be for you. I think that there are a lot of people who watch this series and they're trying to wrestle with the Celtics' potential versus the fact that these games have been competitive. Indiana, it's really been swung by the fact that the Celtics have Kyrie Irving and the Pacers don't have Victor Oladipo. So what do you make of how close and competitive this series has been?
I think it's just the nature of the defensive, you know, a defense-oriented series. That's Indiana's only hope to win is to play that way. And, I think the Celtics actually need a series like this because they have to learn how to win tight games. As everybody knows, they blew a lot of games this season just by taking their foot off the accelerator. They haven't been able to do that in this series. The games have been too close.
Mark, for as much as this next round against Milwaukee, looking past the possibility of the Celtics blowing a 3-0 series lead to a team that's missing its best player, for as much as this year matters, looking long-term, looking towards the offseason, how much do you think what happens in the next round factors into Kyrie Irving's decision in the offseason?
I think it I think it plays a role. I don't think Kyrie knows what he wants. I think, you know, all of a sudden he's happy Kyrie again. But, yeah, he was. I think this team was a disappointment to him. He went through a stretch where he was really disillusioned with the young guys. But as he looks around, you know, how's he gonna feel if he goes down to New York and plays with what they've got down there? You know, even if he and Durant do unite in New York, there's going to be nothing else. You talk about some frustrating days. I mean, that could be what's in for him down there. I think he's just starting to realize the reality of the picture.
Well, Mark, you also could have Zion Williamson as a teammate, too. You know what I mean?
Well,
that maybe. Might be a plug, right?
Maybe.
And I think the key word you said there, Mark, as well, and I know we got to get out of here pretty soon here, but I think the key word was, you know, right now he's happy. And when Kyrie's happy, things are good. When Kyrie isn't happy, things are bad. And that seems to be the MO for the Celtics this year. Boston Herald Celtic writer Mark Murphy, thanks so much for taking the time, buddy. Enjoy the rest of the season and the rest of the series with the Indianapolis.
Hey, guys. Take care.
All right, man. Mark Murphy, interesting points. I mean, listen, you are a Celtic savant. I get it. I really do. But at the end of the day, it seems as if Kyrie's personality and how he feels is where this team goes. And I hope that that's not the case. But it will be interesting to see what happens if he goes to the Knicks. Because if you bring Durant and Kyrie and you have you're either going to get John Morant or you're going to get Zion Williamson. That's quite a team they have down there in New York. I mean, you can build some stuff around that. Green City Garage poll question today. Right now, how many votes do we have right now, kiddo?
I'm not sure. We got a giveaway.
Oh yeah, I know. Let's get up there, and then we'll give the giveaway away. We got time. We got time, buddy.
All right. Right now.
Yep.
We are split 50-50.
50. So right now, half of you think the Celtics are winning the championship. Half of you think it's not happening. Right now, text us on the Town Fair text line 655-6672, the Green City Garage address, and you win a state inspection worth $55. You get your car inspected for free. If you text us right now, 655-6672 from our good friends from Green City Garage. Don't go anywhere. We're going to talk some hockey. NHL playoffs are rolling. The Bruins are one loss away from being out. Can you believe that? We're talking to ESPN producer for ESPN on Ice, Ryan Matlack. Don't go anywhere.
Getting you ready for game day. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Oh, that was a lot of Celtics first two segments, baby. A lot of perceptions on the Boston Celtics. I'm waiting. I'm in wait-and-see mode.
You have to be at this point.
I mean, I really am. And I'm so salty on them. You know? I mean, for the first time in my adult life, my whole life, I actually rooted for a Boston sports team last year with this Boston Celtic team. I love Brad Stevens. I love what he was doing. And then this year, it's like, here we go. Here's the NBA being the NBA.
It's the price of expectations.
LeBron's NBA. I blame LeBron James.
You've got Jason Tatum influenced by Kobe Bryant and Kyrie influenced by LeBron James.
Trouble with a capital T, baby. Trouble with a capital T. But let's enough of this basketball talk and talk about something I really love. Some NHL playoffs, some hockey talk. And who better to talk to than our good friend? And let me just say this, the old boss here at 101.3, joining us now in the TikTok Jewelers guest line, our good friend, Mr. Ryan Matlack. Ryan, my buddy, good morning.
Gentlemen, how are we doing? It's awesome to be on with you.
Ryan, let me just say this, buddy. It is an honor to talk to you. And I bet you were a little shocked when I sent you a text this week to say, hey, Ryan, how about talking some hockey with us on the radio this weekend?
The only thing I was shocked about is I only get a call after the Leafs lose to the Bruins.
Yeah.
Not before, Jeff. That's the only thing I was surprised. The station, Brady has no problem calling me once the Leafs have lost in Game 7. But I never hear before the end of the series. So I have to say, I was not just surprised. I was very pleasantly surprised. I was very happy about it.
You have to be pretty excited, though, about where your Leafs are right now, right?
I feel good.
You should feel very good. Before we get into this, obviously, the series with Boston, and we'll go on to the other series, and obviously with Tampa Bay being knocked out, the overall view of what's going on in the NHL, I do have to ask, who makes these decisions and how they seed these playoffs in the NHL?
When we're talking about seeding?
Yeah, I mean, the seedings are just ridiculous. I mean, to me, when you earn the number one seed and you're playing a team that's got a record that's close to you, I don't get any of that.
No, you're 100% right. It's something that most people, most fans, it's not something where it's a certain fan base griping about it. It's around the league. Everybody sees it and knows that Right now, the way the seating is, it is, you know, the way that the seating works, it needs to be changed. The problem is that this year, with all the parity that we've seen in the first round, it almost screams that this system is working just based off of how great some of the results we're getting. We just saw the greatest regular season team of all time go down in four games to the Columbus Blue Jackets. It's really been tough to watch as a hockey fan if you think you know anything about the sport.
Yeah.
Because after about five games this year, I, again, was just trying to rack my brain on how this sport really works when it gets into the postseason. And we were all there last year, Jeff, as you know, with Vegas going all the way to the Cup Final as an expansion team. So the last 2 years make me doubt really what the NHL should do seeding-wise, but you had a few matchups that you shouldn't have had in the first round, Bruins, Leafs. You probably shouldn't even have had Isles, Pens. So there are certainly reasons for people to be upset about it, but we've still gotten a great first round of hockey. So at the end of the day, the NHL, right now they're probably more focused on what really is goalie interference than is what is seeding.
Well, I will say this, after listening to your explanation there, I almost feel like it's almost a better way to do it, because you're getting, you know, you can't just... There's no cupcakes in the first round. I mean, you really are walking into a firestorm. I mean, you're Tampa Bay and you have an amazing season. You're opening up with a team that absolutely can beat you in the first round. I think that actually, I might have a different thought process now on this whole thing.
Well, it is a good point, because we all want the NHL to be very competitive, and the NBA is the best league at drama, at producing drama. Yep. But the Warriors, for the last 4 or 5 years, have been the bona fide favorite, and most of that time have come through to actually win. And we don't have that in hockey for the most part. Pens won a few back-to-back. Kings have been successful. But really, the parity has been there for the most part. And you find that despite you don't see the best, you don't see the teams that you might have expected to see in the second, third round conference finals, but you still get to see really good hockey. Like, we still had some great series last year when some of the big top dogs were already knocked out of the postseason. So,
but is it good for the product if the big names aren't there, say in the United States of America? I mean, you know, if the Pittsburgh Penguins aren't in it, if the Boston Bruins aren't in it, if, you know, I know the Rangers are, but the big names of hockey, if you got a Columbus Blue Jackets and a Toronto Maple Leafs, you know, is that, I know for you, you're excited about that, but I mean, does that really excite you if you're a passive NHL fan? Is that a problem for the NHL?
It can be. And then the NHL is also worried about where some of their stars are situated. You know, Austin Matthews is, you mentioned with the Leafs, one of the guys that is obviously a huge, and my alarm goes off. Good timing. You can tell I do a lot of
perfect timing. Yeah, exactly.
Interviews. Hey, I don't know. Hold on, guys. I have a interview with Sports Saturday. Just a second. I got to take it. No, you're onto something. They want their best, brightest stars in big-time American markets because that's where the sport needs the most help, is obviously in the U.S. opposed to Canada. So you want to see some of these guys in the conference finals. But when I think about what makes hockey so great, especially in the postseason, is, Jeff, you get postseason heroes. You get guys, household names come out of nowhere. I mean, people forget, but while Tim Thomas was a fan favorite and many people loved him, what made his career and what made the Bruins successful 2011 Cup run was how he played, and he made himself more of a star than he ever did. And I think that's what the Stanley Cup playoffs, that's what I look for, at least, is they make stars. So if you don't have Sidney Crosby in the final, hopefully you find a new one.
Ryan, Bobby Krivitsky here. You don't know me, but I'm the guy who lobbied Jeff and Brady to keep you on today, even after the Leafs won last night.
I'm already a fan, Bobby.
So looking at this series from a Bruins perspective, here's what I can't figure out. How a team led by Zdeno Chara and Patrice Bergeron can come out flat in game one and then do the same thing again last night in the first period of that game.
I was thinking the same thing in game two when they were playing perfect Bruins hockey. Physical. DeBrusk was the perfect rat out there. He did exactly what the Boston Bruins probably thought they could do and get under Nazem Kadri's skin. And it was masterful. It was such a great depiction of what the Boston Bruins do best when they're physical, when they're moving the puck around. And like you said, when Chara, guys like Bergeron, when they're the point men, because that's what's made this team so successful for the last 10 years is core guys like that. And obviously Brad Marchand has been a big part of it. And another thing, too, to that point, as I think of Marchand, is he's a guy who's completely changed his game the last year or so. He's not really the rat that people were beginning to associate him with, or had associated him with. But he hasn't been the guy that the Bruins need to worry about potentially either picking up a suspension or getting in the box. So in that game in particular, they did a great job staying out of the box. The next game in Toronto, things change, right? Like, we've seen the officiating be a little questionable each side. But I was curious, or at least missed, at how well the difference between Game 1 and Game 2, especially, Bobby, since this is a team, the Bruins have no problem getting out in front of the Leafs at TD Garden. At least that's how it's felt for the last 10 years. Yeah, but for the most part, I would say the Bruins have played their best hockey at times, but like you mentioned, there's been times where it hasn't come through, and I haven't been able to put a finger on it yet.
Yeah, they haven't done a good job this series protecting their home barn. I'm glad you brought up Marchand there and the fact that he's really worked hard to change his perception around the league and not be that rat as much, because he's become such a skilled and talented player and so important to the Bruins that he's really worked hard to take less penalties, to keep his anger and his temper in check, right? Walk the line there. And someone who deserves a lot of credit for that transformation in Marchand's game is Patrice Bergeron. But in this series, he hasn't looked great. And last night on the NBC Sports Boston postgame show, Tony Amonte speculated that Bergeron is injured, and that's why he's been playing as physically as he normally does. And is that something that you felt watching Bergeron's game, like he hasn't been as physical, or perhaps that an injury is at the root of that?
He definitely hasn't been as himself. The thing I love about Patrice Bergeron, you know, he's the ultimate warrior. The guy played with a punctured lung in the 2013 playoffs. He is by far one of my favorite players to watch. The black and gold have never taken that away. I think the saying down in Boston is Jesus saves and Bergeron scores on the rebound. Love the guy. I think that at some point we'll know whether or not he's injured if he doesn't show up in the next two games, because this is when Patrice Bergeron finds a way to make himself a part. I mean, obviously he shows up every game if he's completely, if he's 100% or, you know, willing. But this is a guy that knows how to will his team. Like you mentioned, just like a Chara, probably would be wearing the C if not for Chara still being there and being 103 years old. So he's one of those guys that can absolutely turn it on. But I think it's safe to speculate injury at this point. I mean, obviously we're only a few games into the playoffs, but after an 82-game schedule, it could certainly happen. And when Patrice Bergeron looks like that out on the ice, you have reason to wonder what's going on because of his consistency, because of how good he's been for how long.
Ryan, what do you expect to see in the series now? I mean, obviously the Leafs are a win away. I mean, but you know, we understand Boston's pedigree. I mean, is it Toronto's to lose now?
It has to be, just because they're going home. You go home, you have a chance that you've won at home or are already in the series, and you have a chance to tie it down. Do I think that's going to happen? Absolutely not.
Well, because you're a fan. That's your problem.
I am a fan. I certainly have that Leafs doubt. It's so funny. People have been talking about this Drake curse. Drake was spotted at the game.
I did see that.
We're a little late to the party on that one. We haven't won since 1967. I don't think Drake's curse is what anybody's worried about. There's about five others in line before we start worrying about a Canadian.
Now hold on a minute. Now, you know for a fact that when you saw him wearing that jersey, you went, oh, here we go. Your pencil went up in the air. I promise you, the hands went up in the air. Like, here, we need this now, too. We need you, Drake, now. We need this.
Tell me this, Jeff. If you had seen him wearing a UVA jersey prior to the final,
lost
four,
my mind.
What was your thought?
Lost my mind. Would have probably tried to find him. Yeah, lost my mind there. We can't have any. I don't want him anywhere near the Cavaliers. Nowhere near that.
No way you beat Auburn.
Exactly. We'd never beat Auburn if that was the case. Right, listen, Ryan. We have a couple minutes left. If that, I do want to get a quick comment. The rest of the series are very, very tight. Who are the favorites to go to the Stanley Cup Finals, in your opinion?
Oh, you know, it's very tough to put anything past the Blue Jackets just based of what they did. Like, it feels like the ultimate disrespect to say a team that just knocked off the Lightning in four games, and in the way they did it too, guys. Like, some of those games weren't even close. It was unbelievable what happened to the Lightning. So you have to feel good about where John Tortorella has the Blue Jackets playing. You're also talking about a roster of guys don't know their future for next year. Sometimes I think that helps. I think that helps them focus on the time, realizing that this could be the last run for a lot of these guys. You don't know what's going to happen to Bobrovsky, Panarin, Duchesne. So there's a lot of question marks. So I think that there's certainly it should be considered a strong contender coming out of the East. But out of the West, at the beginning of the playoffs, I thought that the Sharks had a good shot. You know, always the bridesmaid, never the bride type of deal with them. But with the Capitals last year, guys, finally getting, you know, over the hump, finally winning the way they did, I feel good about the Sharks. If they're able to get back past Vegas, I feel good about them.
Blue Jacket Sharks, just what NBC wants to hear.
Yeah, exactly. Those are the two markets you want to tap into. Exactly. Hockey will be America's number one sport in no time.
Ryan Matlack, you're the best, buddy. Have a great rest of your weekend and good luck to your Leafs.
Can't go anywhere without saying hi to everybody up there in Vermont. I wouldn't name anybody just because I'll forget somebody. And also, Jeff, of course, thanks so much for having me on. And congrats on the Cavs, man. That was awesome to see them take it home.
Thanks, my man. And come up and see us soon, man. We miss you up here.
You got it. Bobby, appreciate it, everybody. So long.
All right. Ryan Matlack, producer of the ESPN on Ice podcast on ESPN Radio. And let me just say this. I mean, Ryan was an unbelievable talent here up in Burlington. This is where he kind of got his feet wet and obviously handed the baton off to Brady Farkas, our new executive producer here, who's done such a fantastic job. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, it's out in left field time. And I'm a little nervous about this one because I know what it's about. Don't go anywhere.
Get ready because you're about to hear some weird shit. This is Out in Left Field on 101.3 The Game.
All right, Aaron, what do you got this week, buddy?
So, a study apparently is finding that men with beards have more germs than dogs.
Well, that's distressing.
Looks like men with beards are going to be dogged with charges of bad hygiene. That's because a new study suggests that bearded guys actually have more germs than a dog's fur. Researchers at the...
That to me is more distressing because I have two dogs and I mean, I lay on them. I'm, you know, you're kissing them, you're cuddling them, whatever. And I mean, that's more distressing than my beard. I'm just saying.
Name's about to get Scandinavian here, so...
Okay, good luck with that guy. You struggle with the English.
I do.
You know, so I can't imagine what's going to happen with the Scandinavian stuff.
Researchers at the Herzlin Clinic near Zurich, Switzerland.
Perfect. You got Switzerland right.
Well, Zurich, right?
Zurich? I don't know.
I hate to call you out there. You nailed a Herzlinden.
It's exactly.
And then came Zurich. I wasn't expecting that.
I warned you guys. Wanted to determine whether evaluating humans and dogs in the same MRI scanner would be hygienic.
Why do people even do this? Why do we have to even know this?
Exactly.
Like, I don't want to know how many calories in a Big Mac.
I don't
want to know how many calories in a Whopper.
I can't buy into this study without knowing their track record.
Ugh. I don't even know why are you doing this for. Anyway,
it
I'm
wasn't
sorry.
The goal of the study is actually what this is saying.
Oh, okay.
It's saying they were trying to figure out if it was hygienic to evaluate dogs and humans in the same MRI scanners.
Oh, fair enough.
And what they found was that humans might be grosser.
Well, that's not a surprise.
They did so by comparing the bacterial load in colony-forming units, CFUs, of human pathogenic microorganisms in specimens taken from 18 bearded men and 30 furry dogs.
Microorganisms in a beard.
Yes.
Oh, definitely.
Is that a living thing? Is a microorganism?
Yes.
That's a living
thing. There's a lot going on in a beard.
I have got to take this off.
So see, I am imagining that the majority of the 18 bearded men that they put through the scanner, they didn't have the clean-shaven beard like you.
Very tight.
They had a full-blown Stanley Cup playoff beard.
Okay.
You're in game 7 of the conference
right.
finals.
Playoff beard, you're talking. Yeah. Playoff beard. Okay, gotcha. I hope you're right.
The researchers also compared the extent of bacterial contamination of an MRI scanner used by both dogs and humans with two other MRI scanners used only by humans. Turns out all the bearded bros showed high microbial counts compared with only 23 out of 30 dogs. In fact, 7 of the men had so much beard bacteria, they were at risk of getting sick, according to BBC. The jointly used scanners had also significantly lower bacterial counts than the scanners used only by humans. That's weird. On the basis of these findings, dogs can be considered as clean compared with bearded men. Good lord.
I don't, you know. Is there more...
That's all right.
I'm already grossed out.
I'm keeping my beard trimmed from now.
Yeah, I mean, it's just gross. But I mean, like, this information that comes out, it's like, what? Okay. Like, I mean, I don't, you know, like, we got to know how many calories are in the Big Mac, the Whopper, you know, how pizza's bad for you. You know, if you drink too much beer, it's not good for you. Like, we get it.
I think what's
fascinating. You have to remind us. Now, if you got a beard, you're going to be sick.
What's fascinating about this is that what they found was the exact opposite of what they were looking for. They were like, is it safe to put dogs in human MRI scanners? And they're like, oh, wait, the humans are worse.
Now, if you're single and you got a beard, that's a problem now. I mean, is the opposite, is your person you're trying to, you know, date, are they not going to like the fact if you got a beard?
How well do you wash your beard?
Yeah, I mean, seriously. Oh, man.
I got to know about the 18 people they brought in for this.
That's a good point.
These dirty, grimy beards?
I mean, I've seen some beards that are like, in fact, yesterday at Ramonto's, this is so embarrassing. Yesterday at Ramonto's, I was, you know, I'm working, and some, I said, anything else for you? He's like, I can tell you, I don't have anything on my beard. And I was like, oh my God, there was something in my, I don't know what it was. I didn't eat anything. I guess imagine what it was. I hope it was like a piece of paper or something.
You'd have to imagine the guys who were in the study got the study results, and they were like, went home and just started scrubbing their beard like crazy.
Or just shaving it off. If I was Gillette, I'd be using this all every day. All right, time for your sports update, kiddo.
Sports Saturday is back on 101.3 The Game.
It's Sports Saturday, a gloomy, rainy Sports Saturday here in the Burlington area. 802-655-6672 is the number to join us if you want to join our conversation today. Bobby Krivitsky.
Doing so
the
well.
The Itsky, and I just dropped the ball in the air. Bobby Krivitsky joining us from Boston. Best. Boston's Bobby Krivitsky. I love the name, man. I do. You're like Coach K. You know what I mean?
I told you when I was a little kid and we have this basketball camp that's run by the players on the high school basketball team.
Yeah.
And one of them, he couldn't get the name. He said, I'm just calling you Nowitzki from now on.
It's not even, it's Krivitsky. It's a great, you have the perfect sports reporter name. You totally do. Bobby Krivitsky. It's perfect. Sports Today by Bobby Krivitsky. It's perfect. But meaning, Bob, before we get there, our good friends at Vermont Engine Service Incorporated has been in business since 1985, located at 16 Krupp Drive in Williston, 802-863-2326. Or you can find them on Facebook or go to their website, www.vermontengine.com. Their hours of operation are 7:30 to 5 Monday through Friday, and Saturdays 8 to noon. They're an engine machine shop, engine rebuilding, boring and honing of cylinders, crankshaft grinding, head rebuilding, engine balancing, turn brake drums and rotors, flywheel resurfacing. The thing about all this stuff is, Bobby, is that my wife is much more into this. You know what I mean? She, like, this is the kind of stuff that gets her fired up. Like I told you this morning, she's in like destroying my kitchen because she wants to rebuild something. But this is my wife's kind of place. They sell mowers. They sell Dixie choppers and Grasshopper zero turn mowers. They have incredible deals on holdover Dixie choppers. In fact, Dean, the owner today, texted me and said they've got a few left and they're flying out the door. So if you're looking for a great deal, people don't understand. People will tell you that you don't buy a boat this time of year. You don't buy a lawnmower because people want to buy lawnmowers. If you go to Vermont Engine Service today, right now on Krupp Drive in Williston, you can get yourself an incredible deal on a holdover Dixie chopper. And those are no joke. They also have DR Powered Equipment Service Dealership, Briggs & Stratton, Kawasaki, Kohler, and MTD Service Dealers. They work on all brands of mowers, gas-powered pressure washers, and rototillers. Pickup and delivery is available for anything, for small engines or anything like that. So call Dean over at Vermont Engine Service Incorporated. Like I said, Krupp Drive in Williston, 802-863-2326. And Dean in Vermont Engine Service, welcome to the Sports Saturday family. We love having you aboard with us. Interesting conversation the first hour, my good friend Bobby. We talked a lot about the Celtics, talked about the Bees as well. Interesting talk about the NHL as well, obviously, with what's going on with their seedings. There's some teams that are going to be knocked out potentially that may not be good for business. So we've talked a lot about some of the big sports in Boston. And now we're going to talk a little bit about the other team in Boston, the actual defending World Series champion, Boston Red Sox. It hasn't started out so hot for them so far, Bobby.
It has not. And for those who... The Bruins haven't satisfied their ability to get all of their rage out, all of their anger. Right. You have the Red Sox coming to bat for you. It's perplexing because I'm just not sure what went on at spring training. It's one thing to look at the situation and say, our starters just went deep into October. Let's lighten the load. We don't need them throwing as hard as they can in April. We need them doing that in October next year. That's perfectly rational.
If you get there.
But, well, October is playoffs. And
exactly. You got to get to the playoffs.
So I'm talking about at spring training.
Understood.
They had every reason to think they'd make the playoffs at that juncture. Now they're fighting for their lives. But the question is, how does the conversation seemingly stop there and not go to, okay, if they're not going to be throwing as hard as they can to start the season, what can they do to compensate that? And then you look at the offense, and they're not hitting either. And then you look at simple fundamentals of the game. They're not fielding well. They're not running the bases well. Mookie Betts and Jackie Bradley Jr. are two of the best fielders at their respective positions, and they've made several routine mistakes to playing together, watching balls fall right between the two of them, not sure who should get it, who shouldn't. I'm just not certain what exactly happened at spring training other than enjoying the links and the sunshine that comes with being out in Fort Myers.
Well, there's no one better to talk to about that than our good friend from the Boston Globe joining us now on the TikTok Joe's guest line, Boston Red Sox writer for the Globe, Pete Abraham, joins us live from Tampa. Good morning, Pete. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, guys. How are you?
It's good to talk to you this morning. Listen, you just probably heard my co-host here, Bobby, just kind of go into a kind of a thesis of what's going on with the Boston Red Sox, but a team that last night showed some grit coming back and beating what right now is the best team in baseball in Tampa Bay. What are you seeing out of your Sox right now?
Well, the Sox, I mean, to me, it's all about the rotation. It has been very good this year, but the last turn through the rotation has been much better. We've seen Eduardo Rodriguez get himself back under control, Chris Sale. Although he doesn't have the results that he's liked, his velocity has come back. Nathan Eovaldi had a good start in his last start. And Rick Porcello is really the last guy they're trying to get straightened out. Big start for him tonight against the Rays, a team he's had some success with. He's been really atrocious for three starts. And if he can kind of get his season turned around, for me, it all starts for the Sox with their rotation because that makes it much easier on the bullpen and much easier on the offense.
You've been around this team for a long time. You've seen them be spectacular. You've also seen teams start out slow in April. Can Red Sox fans calm down and say, look, it's just April, we have plenty of time, everything's going to be okay?
Well, yeah, I think there's two things at play, that there is a lot of time left, and there's plenty of teams in history that have come back from slow starts. And the other part of it is that this is a much different American League than we're used to. There's so many teams that have backed off with their payroll and are essentially tanking that there are a lot of wins out there to be had. And if the Red Sox can keep it together and get their pitching straightened out, whether it's playing Baltimore 18 times, playing Toronto 18 times, the teams in the Central, some of the teams in the West, they're going to pile up some wins. Now, that's also true for Tampa Bay, and that's also true for the Yankees. But with the two wild cards, there's a bit of a margin for error. The only thing that really matters is to get in the playoffs, however you get in the playoffs. And I think if they can do that, their experience is going to kick in, their pitching depth is going to kick in, and they'll have a pretty good chance to make a run.
Like you said, Pete, we're in the first month of a six-month season, so there's a lot of time for the Red Sox in a rotation that's rounding into form to get right, get themselves in the hunt. And based off what they did last season and the payroll and the talent on this team, there's every reason to expect that despite the slow start, despite the underwhelming start, that they should be able to play them into the mix and compete for at least the play-in game. When it comes to Chris Sale, however, in the Red Sox first game of the season, Jess Mendoza repeatedly pointed out that Sale was missing his spots. You had Jeff Passan from ESPN saying that teams around the league were excited. They liked that the Red Sox committed long-term to Chris Sale. And so my question is, if he can't win with velocity or accuracy, at least at this point in the season when the Ferrari's yet to be taken out of the garage, what can he do to age gracefully over the course of not just this season, but over the life of an extension that hasn't even kicked in yet?
Well, I think anybody who was evaluating him for the future based on those first two starts was probably kind of foolish because the way they were used in spring training, the Red Sox were clearly holding those guys back with the ambition of that they would be better come August, September, and October, which was the case last year. And Sale's velocity was down the first couple starts. His location was poor. I think it was largely that he was still in a spring training mode. He was up to 97 against the Yankees the other day. His location was much better. I think, like many good pitchers you see over the course of time, he is going to lose his velocity. It's almost a natural thing that's going to happen. But he does have a very good changeup. He does have a very good slider. I think he's a guy who's going to be able to adjust. It's not like they gave a 4-year extension to a guy who's 35. He's 30. So it's not like they're entrusting him to be good when he's, you know, closing in on 40. That's not the case. So I think Chris is going to be able to figure it out. I think the fact that his changeup is so good will enable him to kind of live through the loss of velocity, that he can slow the changeup down when his fastball drops and still maintain the differential in speed and fool hitters that way. So I don't look at him as somebody who, you know, is going to fall off the table barring some kind of injury. I think he's somebody who, like most other pitchers, And the great pitchers are the ones who do this the best. The guys who are great in their 20s are the guys who figure out how to be great in their 30s. So I think Sale will be fine over the course of time.
We're talking to Boston Globe Red Sox insider Pete Abraham here on Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. Pete, listen, last year the Red Sox, everything was perfect. I mean, you had three or four guys have career seasons. We saw what happened in the play. I mean, Eovaldi comes in and all of a sudden he becomes, it looks like he's a Cy Young Award winner. We know that what the kind of power they have in the rotation. And their bullpen was suspect last year, but got it done in the playoffs with some really big names at the back end. Those names are gone now, and you're still trying to piecemeal this bullpen together. We're not sure who's going to close games every day. Well, at the end of the day, is that going to be an Achilles heel to the Sox? Is this bullpen still going to be a problem?
Well, you know, it's been interesting in this beginning of the season slump that they've had. The bullpen's actually been pretty good when they've had leads. Matt Barnes and Brandon Workman and Ryan Brazier, I think, combined have an ERA just under two. Their whip is under a run. Those guys have actually been pretty good. It's been, I think the rest of the bullpen's kind of shaky. They're not getting what they wanted out of those guys. But when they've had leads like they had on Friday night against Tampa, they've been able to use those guys in the right spots. I really love the way they're using Matt Barnes, bringing him in to face the best hitters, whether it's in the 7th inning, 8th inning, or 9th inning, and not leaving him waiting for a save situation where you're not getting the most out of him. To me, using your best reliever only in certain situations really hamstrings a manager, and I think what they're doing and what other teams are trying to do will eventually change the way baseball looks at late innings, and not that saves are going to go away or closers are going to go away, but I think you're going to see fewer teams reliant on a guy who can only come in a save situation in the 9th inning in favor of kind of what the Sox are trying to do, what the Cubs are trying to do, and be more flexible. I'd like to see them add to what they have in the late innings. I think they need somebody else to step up. I don't know if it's somebody who's on the staff right now. It could be one of the kids they have in the minors. They really like Darwinson Hernandez, who's a lefty at Portland. They were impressed with him at spring training. I think they have a couple of guys at Pawtucket who are starters who could end up maybe being good relievers for them. But they need a fourth guy. To me, is that's one of the weaknesses, that they Heath Embry, Colton Brewer, these other guys who they have in the bullpen, I don't know that they trust them with a lead, but they need to find somebody else to supplement that group of Barnes, Brazier, and Workman.
And you know, and also the other thing for me with this bullpen, and again, I get the picture you're painting, there haven't been a lot of leads the first 3 weeks of the season. So, you know, it is a small sample size of what we've seen, but we also know that young pitchers, you know, veteran hitters adjust, just like and vice versa. You know, I mean, you have pitchers that come in and are kind of, for the first couple of weeks, they're unbelievable. People adjust. My question is, do these guys... have the type of stuff that when hitters start to adjust on them, that they can, that can carry them and they can make the adjustment back on those hitters?
Well, I think Barnes does. When you look at the fact that he can throw 97 and he has a very good curveball, he got two swinging strikeouts on curveballs last night. What the Sox are trying to do is match their pitcher's strengths up against the opposing team's hitter's weaknesses. And if there's three guys coming up and two of them don't handle curveballs very well, that's when you want to go to Barnes. If the next three guys are guys who haven't shown they can hit a slider, that's when you want to go to Brazier. If they're looking for a ground ball, they might go to Workman at that point. Now, it's not going to work like that every night. There's going to be times guys aren't available. You're going to have to probably try to get away with situations that aren't necessarily advantageous to the guys you have available. That's one of the reasons I think they need another person who they can trust in that late inning situation. But what they're trying to do is to use analytics and to use scouting reports and try to match up their guys as best they can and not be as concerned about what inning it is, but more concerned about the matchups, that this is the best hitter to, this is the best pitcher to face this particular group of hitters, and not get so caught up in is this the traditionally right time that you would use this guy. Make it more what do the reports, what does the information tell you, what is the right time to use this guy.
Pete, we're right around the time where it's believed that one or two of these Red Sox pitching prospects that you mentioned might get called up and get their opportunity. Who do you think is in line to be that prospect or prospects that get called up first? How soon do you think it will happen? And you talk about late innings. Is it fair to throw those guys into the fire past the seventh inning of a competitive game?
Yeah, I mean, you see it with a lot of teams that guys come up who are starting pitchers in the minors, and they break them into the big leagues coming through the bullpen. That's something that a lot of people have had success with. I mean, that's what Chris Sale did early in his career. So it could be whether it's they got a right-hander named Mike Schaurin, who's in Pawtucket, who had a very good spring training. I mentioned Darwinson Hernandez, who's in Portland. There are some guys that the Sox had in camp, and this was on purpose, to try to get a look at them to have a sense of could they help them at some point during the season, because inevitably there's going to be injuries, there's going to be downturns where certain guys aren't performing well. A bullpen changes dramatically over the course of the year. When you look at the 2013 Red Sox, for instance, I think there were only two players in their opening day bullpen that ended up in their playoff roster bullpen because there were just so many changes to that team. I mean, Brandon Workman wasn't even invited to Major League spring training, and he ended up being one of their most important relievers in the World Series. So you'll see plenty of changes. And I think what Alex Cora would like to try to do is use guys who are starters in the minors and bring them up at some point during the season and maybe use them kind of like they've used Brian Johnson and Hector Velasquez, to give them two innings out of the bullpen on occasion. Maybe not the high leverage innings late in games, but to bridge the gap between starters and guys like Barnes and Brazier, and maybe elongate that bullpen a little bit. They had success doing that last year. But with Johnson injured right now, they could use another guy like that. And I think they're waiting for their opportunity to give those guys some more time in the minors to build up innings. And then whether it's in late May, maybe June, bring one of those guys up and give the bullpen a little bit of a different look.
Pete, you're the man. Thanks for the time. How's the weather down in Tampa? Is it warm?
It was pouring like the end of the world yesterday, but it's nice today.
Oh, man. I want to be in Florida so bad. The weather up here is so bad. You know what I mean? Have a great day, buddy. Thanks for calling. We appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, the great Pete Abraham from the Boston Globe. I got to say, I mean, he's painting a nice picture for a Red Sox fan, but I don't know how the hell you go through the rest of the season with this bullpen. I mean, I don't care whether you like this guy, whether you think you like this guy. This bullpen's not going to hold it down for you. I mean, I don't trust any of those guys in the back end of that bullpen in a high-leverage situation. And the leads for the Red Sox have been far and few in between this season. I mean, so it's like, yeah, they pitched pretty well with leads, but they haven't had very many leads.
So last year in the postseason, Matt Barnes was the relief pitcher they trusted in high leverage situations. In the most dangerous situations, it's when they handed the ball to Matt Barnes, and he was excellent for them. And he's built on that this season. And I think Brazier, with the heat that he throws and his ability, again, to perform in the postseason, gave them confidence in that for the most part. You talked about
when you win 108 games, or 110 games, whatever they won in the regular season, which is unbelievable. You don't have a whole lot of high leverage games.
Playoffs are a different animal.
I agree with that, but the guys have stepped up in play. I agree with you. Playoffs are one thing. You get to the playoffs, doesn't matter who you are. You could have been the Yankees of the wild card team and been the hottest team. Who knows if you get hot and win games? But for a 162 game season, they were elite last year. I mean, with all the things that happened with the Red Sox, when you look at the names up and down the lineup, what those guys did last year, they were pounding the ball. The rotation was stellar. They took care of a lot of problems. If the Red Sox have a normal season this year, this bullpen's going to come back to bite them. I'm not too worried about the rotation. I agree with him on that. You got to believe the back of the baseball card with that. But this bullpen's going to be a problem. But we can talk more about that. We got plenty of time, my man.
I think we have to.
Take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Another day of sports talk in the Champlain Valley. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
.655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation today. 802-655-6672. Or you can text us on the Town Fair Tire text line. Same number, 802-655-6672. It's been a full show. Bobby Krivitsky joining me this morning, my co-host here on Sports Saturday. Boston's Bobby Krivitsky. Say that 10 times fast. I'm not going to try. And I'm not going to have you try either, Aaron.
I'd rather not.
You struggle with
Switzerland. I don't even know if I could do it.
Interesting conversation. We had first hour. We had Mark Murphy of the Celtics. Celtics are a game away from moving on to the second round of the playoffs. Looking better, I think. Obviously, there's a lot of different philosophies on the Boston Celtics, what people think about them. But obviously, a team with high expectation, and we expect them to compete for at least an Eastern championship, if that's possible. But they're one game away from moving on. Ryan Matlack, the producer of ESPN and Ice podcast, ESPN Radio, talks some hockey playoffs. One of the things I think is most important about the hockey piece is not about how whether the great games are great or how compelling they are. And if you look at where these series are, 2-2, 3-2, they're all close. The fact is that the name brand, the star power, the city power, just may not be there when we're getting to the big enchilada, which will be the Stanley Cup championship.
It reminds me of in March Madness, when you see all the upsets in the beginning, you're so entertained, you think, oh, this is great. But what happens is, as you get down to the final few teams, and it's not the high-quality, brand-name, blue-blooded programs that you want to watch and are compelled to tune into, when you don't get to see Zion Williamson in the Final Four, that's when you realize, oh, maybe these first-round upsets it wasn't the best thing in the long run.
But don't you think, if you're going to compare the NCAA, NCAA basketball and NHL hockey, I think the NCAA piece is such a bigger deal in this country than, say, the NHL pieces. And I only say that because when you're trying to find NHL playoff games, like I have been, because there's nothing better. I love playoff anything because that's where they really play, especially when you're talking about professionals. When you talk about the NBA and the NHL, I mean, these guys are playing in the playoff start. And that's what's compelling to me. But try to find a game. I mean, where are they? You're not going to find it. You're not going to find an NHL game. You have to pay a lot of money to have the big packages to watch any of these games. And I think that says a lot. Where the NCAA tournament, it's a little bit more compelling because I think there's more exposure throughout the year, say on ESPN and CBS Sports and NBC Sports Network, where you're going to get a little bit more. It's a little bit more compelling than that. That's where I think the NHL's real problem is.
Yeah, the NCAA tournament, the NCAA has done a really good job marketing. Yeah. It's one of the best marketing jobs of any sporting event ever or any sporting tournament. Well, whereas the NHL, I don't think has done quite as well of a job.
Well, and again, I think it's just about star power. I mean, if the Stanley Cup Championship is the Blue Jackets and the Sharks. I mean, that's a big problem for NBC. That's like Tiger Woods not making the cut in, say, the MCI Heritage Classic in the middle. You know what I mean? Like, that's a big deal for these networks.
When ESPN pulled away from the NHL at the lockout, it was a huge blow to interest in the game, where now, for the most part, fans really just watch their team. They don't watch on NBC Sports Network, a national network.
Right.
They don't watch the West Coast game inside the NBA, for example, gets huge ratings at 2 o'clock in the morning because people love the NBA and they find that entertaining. They find it compelling.
Exactly.
They want to hear what Shaq and Chuck say, but people will not stay up for a 10 o'clock Sharks Flames game. They just have no interest in it unless they are fans of those two teams specifically.
And I think that's the difference between, say, the NCAA tournament and, say, if, for example, if Duke was upset in the first round by pick a 16 seed, or even you can pick anything. Last year, with Virginia being knocked out by UMBC, I think that's a compelling story because people want to see, can UMBC continue this run? When Syracuse, I remember, got beat by Vermont a few years ago when they were a 13 seed years ago, when UVM, unbelievable win against Syracuse, historic up here. People were tuned in because of the story of UVM, Tom Brennan, obviously, and can UVM go on and beat Michigan State next round? Those are compelling. When you're talking about the NHL piece, that's not as compelling. You have to be a diehard fan to kind of follow it. But, it's definitely an interesting conversation. And obviously, talking to Pete Abraham of the Globe last segment about the Red Sox. I mean, look, you're starting this. This is not where the Red Sox fans, I don't even think the players, you can see it starting to frustrate the players. They're starting to try to do too much. It's not where they expect it to be. But let's be realistic here. Baseball is most of the time you're failing. You hit 3 out of 10. You got to hit 10, 3 out of 10 times. You're batting 300. You're going to the Hall of Fame. You do that every time. The reality here is I think the Red Sox will be fine, but there's definitely question marks with this baseball team. I mean, this bullpen, I will go into it. There is no way late in the season, that a 162-game season, these guys are going to hold up. I just can't imagine. You have to show me that these guys are going to be able to make the adjustments against these teams. I agree with Pete that there's a lot of wins to get out there. But when you look at the big teams, the Houstons, the Yankees, the Red Sox, I think you're going to see Tampa Bay's got a great pitch. They're going to be there for a while. I think the Red Sox have to make an adjustment. But more importantly, they peaked last season. I mean, look what Mookie Betts and look what Bogarts. And look at all these guys did last year. Look what J.D. Martinez did last year. Look what they got out of every position on the field. They got something out of. I mean, it was a record-breaking season. I mean, they got to come back to earth sometime, right?
As a team, they overachieved, but the names you just rattled off are proven to be very good to great players.
Sure.
J.D. Martinez has a track record the last few years. Mookie Betts has a track record the last few years. He didn't win MVP out of nowhere. He's always been considered.
You got to admit last year was Adam. I mean, Mookie Betts is a great up and coming player, but he was coming off a year that I would say wasn't up to a Mookie Betts type season going into last season.
But see, that's the point. There already was a standard going into 2017 when he underperformed of, we expect Mookie Betts to perform at a high level. And then he got back to that with Alex Cora coming in, with new hitting coaches, with JD Martinez there to make things easier on him in the lineup. These are players with a proven pedigree. Last season, yes, as a team collectively, they overachieved, for sure. But this is still a team with high expectations that even leveling off is a World Series competitor and a contender. And with the bullpen, I'm not that concerned because they have options and it's always something that you can
piece together. But what options do you have?
So I mentioned before the break that Barnes and Brazier, you don't have to buy into them, but they did prove it in the playoffs last season. And I'm not talking 162-game regular season where, for the most part, there's not the same pressure. But when the intensity turned up, when they're playing in Yankee Stadium, when they're playing against the Houston Astros, the defending World Series champions, when they're playing the Dodgers, who won 92 games and also have a huge payroll and have one of the best players in the game, Manny Machado, they showed up. They performed very well.
Like they showed up with, and again, I'm with you, but they also showed up with Craig Kimbrel. They also showed up with Joe Kelly. Two guys, I mean, and Kimbrel, who didn't have a very good season last year, was very good, and especially when they got to the World Series and the ALCS. He was solid in the World Series, and when you look at Joe Kelly, he carried that bullpen during the playoffs.
I wouldn't say that. Again, the guy they trusted in the most difficult situations coming out of the pen was Matt Barnes. Joe Kelly pitched well. Craig Kimbrel, it was dicey. So many of the saves that he got were the outfield bailing him out. Great catches from Andrew Benintendi. The infield, even Eduardo Nunez in that closeout game against the Yankees, comes running in,
makes a great play,
throws him out the stretch from, I believe it was Moreland, maybe it was Steve Pierce. But it was a roller coaster ride that usually ended safely when Kimbrel was on the mound. I don't think he pitched well, but they did get the win.
Didn't pitch well, and I get it. And the Red Sox bullpen was a question last season too. With the 110 wins, they were still a question. But go ahead, Aaron. I know you had a thing to add there.
Craig Kimbrel, I would say, underperformed for who he was in the playoffs. But like you said, you see pitchers have a bad day every once in a while. You see hitters go on a dry spell every once in a while. What you don't see, which is happening with the Red Sox right now and has to get sorted out, is you don't see a full starting pitching rotation look this bad, this consistently, that often when they're this talented. You also don't see, Bobby was saying earlier, you don't see guys as talented as Jackie Bradley and Mookie Betts making mistakes in the outfield the way they have been.
But teams also go 7-14 throughout the season at times. You just don't recognize it if they do it in August when they've had a run where they've won 14 out of 16 games. Teams start out like this. I mean, every team's going to have a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks where they don't play very well. You're going to have that. And I think when you look at Mookie Betts and Jackie Bradley Jr. making mistakes, I think it's a lot like you're seeing with the Yankees. Is they're trying to overcompensate for everything else that's going bad around them. So they're trying to kind of play outside themselves. I'm not saying you got to hit the panic button with the Red Sox, but I think there's still a work in progress in terms of where they want to get to.
Oh, no question. You can't look at the team and just based off one win last night in Tampa Bay and say, they're ready, they're back, I'm all the way in.
And as a Red Sox fan, if you watched it last night, did you think when they went up 4-2, I think Mookie Betts hit the home run to give them the two-run lead, right? But when they got up 4-2 at one point, did Red Sox fans think, okay, here we go, we're going to straighten this out, and then boom, Tampa Bay comes back and ties it, you know, and then late in the game, Mookie, I think, ends up winning the game for him with a big, or he had a home run, there's another home run behind it, or whatever it was. So, obviously, you feel better about that when you see your hitter sitting like that, and I think one of the things that you got to like about Mookie Betts last night also was he went the other way. And when you hit the ball up the middle and the other way, that means that these guys are starting to get locked in. But hey, listen, it's a long season. I mean, it is. And there's some bad news right now with New York, with the Mets. I mean, Jacob DeGrom is going to have an MRI on Monday on his elbow. I mean, that's scary.
Why can't the Mets have nice things?
Yeah, I know. I know. It's just one of those things. But if you look at the Mets on paper, they're a team that should be a better baseball team. They're a team that you should expect. But if DeGrom is out for any amount of time, he's on the 10-day injured list right now. But there's no way you come back in 10 days from an elbow. I mean, I don't know. I don't care what the problem is. It's going to be longer than that. That's a problem for the Mets.
And again, you talk about the Red Sox pacing themselves to start a 6-month season. The Mets have to do the same with Jacob DeGrom, who they've now committed financially to for the long term. So you can't rush him back from an injury to his throwing arm.
No, you can't. No, of course not. You can't. No, there's no question you can do that. Interesting thing about the free agency now, right? We talked about this a couple of weeks ago with Austin Danforth, who was in your seat that day. Baseball now, with what happened in the offseason with Manny Machado and Bryce Harper, where I've always said back in the 80s, 90s, early 2000s, the superstars, when they were free agents, they picked where they wanted to go. Like, I can tell you right now that when Manny Machado and Bryce Harper looked at their future and they said, okay, we're going to be free agents in the year going into 2019, they were thinking, if I want to play for the Yankees, that's where I'm going. If I want to play for the Cubs, that's where I'm going. If I want to play for the Dodgers, that's where I'm going. If I want to play for the Red Sox, that's where I'm going. There's a whole new level of how people are doing things now. Do you notice that all these superstar athletes now are signing, they're signing extensions? Instead of testing free agency, they're signing extensions. DeGrom signed an extension. Xander Bogaerts signed an extension. I mean, the third baseman in Houston, Bregman, just signed an extension. Chris Sale just signed an extension. All these guys have learned that maybe the free agent waters aren't as good, and I think that's going to be great for baseball. Mike Trout signed an extension. Think about that for a second. I mean, Trout could have got. You think about the best player in baseball could have been facing you know, you think about going into free agency and being able to experience that, you know, pick where you want to go, be able to get what you want. I think he learned that it may not be very good if I do that. Maybe I got to stay here and get the money that I can get.
I thought that Mike Trout re-signing with the Angels was not only a mistake on his part, I thought it was horrible for the game of baseball.
Right.
I thought for sure that Mike Trout was someone who's already had a huge contract, and despite the MLB's struggles promoting its top players, he can get plenty of money in endorsements off the field as well. I thought the play for Mike Trout, go home, go back to Philadelphia. Bryce Harper will be
there. But they may not have the money there by that time. That's the thing. You can't risk it. That's the problem he's got. I mean, the same thing could be said about Robinson Cano a few years ago with the Yankees. The Yankees offered him a little bit less money. He decides to go to Seattle. Where? What's the point of being in Seattle if you're Robinson Cano?
Mike Trout is on a Los Angeles Angels team that no one watches, no one cares about. He's the best player in the game, and I rarely see highlights of him come across my Twitter feed even.
No, I agree with you, but is it bad for the game of baseball that teams can keep their superstars? Like, is it bad for a team like Anaheim, for the fan base of Anaheim, to say they're going to keep Mike Trout because he wants to stay in Anaheim? That's not bad for baseball.
To draw a comparison to what's happening in the NBA right now with the top players, and you talked about in the 80s, baseball players choosing their destiny and where they're going to ultimately end up going.
Not just the 80s, 90s, and I mean up until maybe a couple years ago.
I think in both sports, it's gone too far. In baseball, sometimes I'll buy into the conspiracy theories. I do think there's collusion going on from the owners in baseball to suppress the markets. And yes, ultimately...
But the money that... I'll let you finish. Go ahead.
Ultimately, these players are getting huge contracts. But when you look at how long it's taking to see Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, two of the top players in the game, they're about 26 years old, and they're lingering into spring training.
Because they want 10 or 12-year contracts, and they want huge money, and they want guaranteed money. That's the problem. A-Rod's created this. I mean, if there's a model that the Yankees have shown is that it doesn't work. I mean, you're going to hamstring. I mean, there's only a handful of organizations that are going to spend that type of money. And so that's the point. Like, yes, Bryce Harper and Manny Machado sat out there for a long time, but not because nobody wanted them or because there's collusion that we don't want to do it. It's these teams don't want to give that type of contract out anymore. They don't want to spend that kind of money. They don't want to be committed to something like that for, say, maybe a run at maybe one championship, if that. I mean, these players have to make a decision in terms of what they want to do for their futures. And I think, and I'm not trying to overwalk you here, but I think in a term of like Mike Trout, he looked at it and said, you know what? I'd love to go back to Philadelphia and play. That's where I grew up. I'd love to be a Philadelphia, but there's no guarantee that's going to happen. The money that I'm going to want, the money that I'm going to demand, is not going to match that criteria. So I better just do what I'm going to stay here and I'm going to stay at my hometown team.
The Angels do not look like they're going to be competitive in the near future.
You're right.
It would have been great for baseball to have him, even if the money from the Phillies is gone. The Yankees, for example, your Brock Spalmers always have money. There's always money in the
Yankees. You're absolutely right, but the Yankees have proven that they're not going to drop 10, 11, they're not going to drop that kind of money for 10 or 11 or 12 years, and that's what a guy like this is going to want. And that's the problem. That's where I'm coming from. And I don't think it's bad for baseball that the stars are staying in their hometowns. I agree with you for Mike Trout himself to be playing in a different market where he could actually compete and win. Major League Baseball has got its own issue if they want to market Mike Trout or not. That's fine. But in terms of a hometown kid staying in a team that may not be very good, staying home, that's good for the game, don't you think?
It's gone too far. It's good for the teams. It's not good for baseball because there is a line there. There is a point where what's good for the team is not necessarily good for the sport. And they've crossed over, just like in the NBA, the players having so much power has crossed over that some of these guys have so much free will and so much reign
But haven't the owners proven that the players don't have it anymore? That the owners are taking control with what's happened? Like the owners are saying, look, we're not doing this anymore. I mean, we're gonna pay you what we think you're worth, but we're not gonna give you that kind of time on the contract.
Like in the NBA where it's the opposite. Both have gone too far towards opposite ends of the spectrum.
Gotcha.
I think it depends on the market. I think if you have a market as strong as New York, it's great to have superstars choose to stay in their hometown like Derek Jeter did, or like we hope Mookie Betts will for the going forward. But I think Bobby's completely right in specifically the case of Mike Trout and guys like him who are in markets that are not doing well in terms of...
He's in Los Angeles.
Yeah, Los Angeles is historically, unless you are the Lakers or the Dodgers, they don't do very well at supporting their teams.
But that is not Mike Trout's problem.
Baseball's problem.
But if baseball wants to market Mike, but that has nothing to do with his decision to stay in Anaheim. Like a league cannot decide where they want their players to be. I mean, baseball is baseball, and if an organization wants to pony up the money to keep their players, they do it. If Anaheim isn't any good, that's not.
But that's not.
No one has to be wrong for it to be bad for the sport that Mike Trout is presumably going to be an Angel for the majority of his career, a team that there's no sign right now of them being competitive in at least the short term and potentially the long term.
But you can say that. I mean, there's a lot of teams. There's so many things that can happen year to year. You don't know that. What if the Angels have some kid? I mean, you just don't know. I guess I'm missing both of your points. I mean, my whole point here is that it looks like the owners have taken control of. We're not just going to throw crazy money out. There's different ways to build organizations. You've seen that from Houston. You've seen it from the Red Sox. You're seeing it from the Yankees right now. And so these superstars are deciding we're going to stay and we're going to stay with our organization. And a lot of the superstars are doing that. I guess I don't understand where that's wrong.
So it's smart for the owners to recognize we can't give out these massive long-term
contracts.
Although you look at Harper, Machado, they got the 10, 13 year deals.
I promise you that their goal wasn't to be in San Diego and Philadelphia. I promise that coming in.
Right, and we know that Harper would have preferred to be on the West Coast.
Exactly.
And closer to Las Vegas, where he's from. And I also love it. Forget Mike Trout, for example. In general, it's a great story when the small market team keeps its players. The Minnesota Twins, for example, year after year, lost their guys, like Johan Santana going to the Mets, for example. So it's great when the small market, and I'm not talking about Trout in Los Angeles,
sure,
but when the small market can keep their superstar, their homegrown talent, that's a great feel-good story, and that city loves it. But that's different than saying that you have a situation where the best player in baseball is on a team that right now is irrelevant, and yes, they could turn it around, but at the moment, there's no sign of it happening, not just this year, but in at least the next handful of years. The short term, there's no sign of Mike Trout being in the playoffs.
But your argument is that baseball's broken then in that case, and nobody cares about watching the game of baseball. But when you look at it from a fan's perspective, and how I'm looking at it, as if I'm an Anaheim Angels fan, I am psyched that my hometown kids, the guy that we drafted, we groomed, is going to stay here and play the rest of his career.
It actually seems to boil down to the problem the NHL is having, that baseball is concerned, I think, about having too, which is that they're becoming regionalized, with the exception of certain teams like the Yankees and the Red Sox, who have a following all over the place. Teams like Anaheim, if you're not right there around the team, you don't really care.
All right, we're way over, so I know we have to take a break.
We are.
Let's take a quick break.
Music's been going for a while.
We'll come back. We'll tackle this when we get back.
I wouldn't bother with those winter coats because Sports Saturday is about to bring the heat. It's time for Hot or Not on 101.3 The Game.
Well, that's more like it. Two people in the room disagreeing with me. That's what I'm used to around here.
Bobby Kravitz,
I don't disagree with you.
My God. You know, that was some debate there. Jan from Underhill just texted us on the Town Fair Tire text line. Baseball hit the reset button on crazy money. This is good for the game. We've got a lot of texts on this, by the way.
Agreed. It's the bigger problem is where Mike Trout happened to start. Him staying isn't necessarily good for the overall game in terms of people eyeballs being on your best product.
It's the gray area. It's not that it's the wrong approach. It's that they've gone too far with it.
Okay. Listen, each organization in the game of baseball is their own business. They create their own business. So if it may not be great for baseball, if you'd rather see Bryce Harper play next to Mike Trout in the outfield in Citizens Bank Park, I get that. You might want to see that. But for an organization to make this, it's their organizational decision to make. And if you put a good, and baseball's proven, if you put a good product on the field, people are going to watch you. It's just reality. It's just reality.
Mike Trout didn't do anything wrong taking the richest contract in sports history. The Angels didn't do anything wrong offering him the richest contract in sports history. But it's not good for the MLB that Mike Trout figures to not be in the postseason, let alone competing for the World Series for the next handful of years, barring some unforeseen change for a team right now that stinks.
Then you know how you fix that? Then you know how you fix that?
About.
Then you know how you fix that? You put more teams in the playoffs. Like the NBA has more teams.
But
that's the only way you can fix that. Then that's not fair to these organizations that want to keep their guys.
No one wants the 6-10 Buffalo Bills in the playoffs.
Fair enough. Okay. The NFL's a different animal. We know that.
It's not the organization's problem. Those teams, they're doing what's best for them. The MLB needs to change the way they market said organizations.
Fair enough. If that's what they have to do better, fine. But I am never going to get on an organization for saying, you know what, we want to keep this guy. And I'm never going to get on any. And I like the fact that the ownership in baseball have decided, because of some of the models of the Houston Astros, the Boston Red Sox, the New York Yankees, the Kansas City Royals, when they won their World Series a few years ago, was that we're going to build from the bottom up, and we're not going to drop all this money now on one or two guys and be hamstrung late in that contract. I'm glad that happened.
That's what Brady's been saying for years. Homegrown winning is the best way to win.
Yeah, there's no question about it.
That philosophy transcends.
And nobody can talk smack to you either.
That philosophy transcends sports. It's about building through the draft, building through the minor leagues in baseball's case, and then you augment in free agency and with trades. However, you don't have to point the finger and say, you're at fault, you're to blame, you did something wrong, to say, this still isn't good for the sport, for the MLB as a whole. Mike Trout in Philadelphia with Bryce Harper is something that gets the attention of people who are not just Phillies fans.
But let me ask this question, and we're going to get to hot or not, because, you know, we got to talk about some superb cupcakes, because you know how much I love me some superb cupcakes. But let me just say this. Is it good for the NBA to have a team that's got... that had LeBron James and Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade on it? Was that good for the NBA?
Was fantastic.
It wasn't good for the NBA. It showed that you had to have a super team to win.
They marketed it to their advantage, though.
But then
super
fine.
Teams
then,
sell.
Then you want to talk about a marketing issue with the MLB? Fine, that's totally fine. But a super team might sell, but it's not intriguing for a fan that's going to. What's the point of watching? You know it's going to, unless you want to watch
two
a superstar.
Titles. They were together 4 years. They won as much as they lost.
I understand what I know. Come on, please. I mean, but that was the marker for Golden State to be created. And I understand the NBA product's different than baseball, but at the end of the day, you look at this. For me, each team is its own organization. I'm repeating myself again. If they want to spend the money on what they want to do, if you want to talk about branding these guys, then maybe MLB's got to do a better job. I'm a baseball fan anyway, so I've always said, get out of my game. Like, if you don't like the game, don't watch it. If you like it, you watch it, period. You know, all these rule changes and all this garbage that we have to do. But for me, and I know we got to get to hot or not here, but for me, I'm glad that he stayed there. I'm glad that we don't have those crazy contracts with those long years that are hamstringing organizations. And I think it's going to help the game of baseball if you're able to keep your draft picks, keep your guys, and build around them. Maybe you'll see Anaheim in 3 or 4 or 5 years be the team that you want them to be for Mike Trout. I mean, that's how you build it up. To me, am I wrong? Am I going around in circles?
Here's hoping they have to become.
All right, get the superb cupcakes. I don't mean to interrupt. Let's get the superb cupcakes.
It's about the nuance.
Yeah. I love me some cupcakes. Let's go.
All right, this is Hot or Not, believe it or not. Hot or Not is thanks to Superb Cupcakes in Williston. Stop by Superb Cupcakes in the Taft Corner Shopping Center in Williston for the best cupcakes around. They will not disappoint, offering over 100 flavors of regular and mini cupcakes made from scratch daily. No box mix here.
Right.
We are already just about at the point where we need to go to break, so we're going to cut this a little short, and we're going to cut the next segment way short.
Okay, sounds
just
good.
So everyone knows. Yeah. All right, let's get into it. Offensive players like Tim Anderson should be able to celebrate homers and other scoring plays without violent retaliation.
Oh, okay. I'm hot and not on that. Hot, go ahead, throw the bat, but not if you want. If you do it, don't be afraid to get beaned. Don't throw it at their head. That's been baseball for 100 years. Let them police themselves.
Lots of other things happened for hundreds of years that weren't good things.
Oh, here we go.
Okay, so you're a pitcher. You get homered on.
Yeah.
The next thing you do is either hurt a guy or put him on base.
It doesn't have to be the pitcher that did it. It could be the team thing. It's like what CC Sabathia did last year in the last game against Tampa Bay.
Well, regardless, the next time that guy is up to the plate, you either put him on base or you hurt him.
Who said you're hurting him, Aaron? No one's saying you hurt anybody.
Giancarlo Stanton had to get his face reconstructed.
Because he threw it at his... Because that was
it
a pitch.
It hit him in the face.
Okay, let me start. Okay, it hit him in the face, not because the guy was trying to throw it. You know what? You don't throw it at their head. Maybe you throw it at their... You throw it behind him. Maybe you throw it at their back. You throw it at their rear end. I mean, yeah, that's been baseball forever.
Better example, the Acuna hitting last year. When he got hit in the arm... The young guy, big time upcoming star.
Yeah.
But
arm
those
gets
are
busted up.
The exception. You rarely see someone throw at a batter for showing them up with the intent of injuring them,
but
or even see that
I
happen
said the
by all, accident.
But then the other outcome is he's on base now. So you lose either way. So just pitch better.
So the MLB's unwritten rules are stupid. You might not agree with that, Jeff, but
it's logic.
They contradict each other left and right. They're nonsensical. Like he said, you're putting a runner on base for nothing.
That's fair enough, but it's not, but again, but that's, but that's you either decide to throw at him or you decide not to throw at him.
So from an entertainment perspective, I love that if you get shown up, you come back and you bean that batter.
Yeah.
Let's play it up. I love when they charge the mound. I love the bat flips, all that. But Amir Garrett, who's a pitcher for the Reds, who also played college basketball for St. John's, he, to paraphrase, came out in response to this Tim Anderson situation and said, MLB players in general are so sensitive, and I seriously doubt that they could handle playing another sport and being in that type of environment and even just in a locker room and what goes on in a different sport. And I think it's the truth. These guys get worked up because Jose Bautista, for example, to take it back to the Toronto days, has this epic bat flip that every fan around the country, around the world who watches baseball loves it, eats it up. But that guy's so embarrassed. His pride's been so fractured that he has to come back and bean him the next time. And he can't handle it, and he's going to say something to the media that makes him sound like a baby.
Guys, listen. I mean, you're overanalyzing something that doesn't. I mean, do you want to get rid of the fights in NHL? Do you want to get rid of that stuff, which I think is more ridiculous than that, where the gloves come off and we're physically beating the bag out of each other? Do you want to get rid of all that stuff? I mean, baseball is baseball, and there are parts of the game whether you like it or not. I have no problem with bat flips. I have no problem with people barking at each other. But that's it's just part of the game. It's part of what's made baseball an allure. You know, you don't want anyone to get hurt, Aaron. I'm not saying throw it at somebody's head or throw it at somebody's elbow. If somebody wants to make a point, they miss them by throwing behind them, or they hit them in the butt, or they hit them in the leg or something. I'm not saying you're going to try to hurt anybody, but that's been part of the game forever.
Well, if you hit him in the butt, all you've accomplished is getting a base runner on. So,
but it doesn't matter. But that's the decision the team has to make. And maybe you do it.
Matters if he scores.
It doesn't matter if you're up 8-0. It doesn't matter if it's a week later. And it's not up to you to decide that anyway. It's part of the game.
We've gone over once again. But the approach should be, and if you want to hit the guy, that's entertaining. So I'm cool.
And I'm not saying I want you to hit anybody. I'm just saying it's part of the game.
The mature approach should be, he showed me up last time. Now it's my turn.
Fair enough. Maybe that does happen. But the next time, maybe the next time it happens is a game down the road where it's not going to hurt you too much to make a statement.
All I'm saying, I guess, is I'd rather see you come out, throw three really nasty strikes, than flip them off and get on SportsCenter.
Okay, I mean, fine. But I mean, I guess what I'm saying is there's no right or wrong answer here. It's part of the game. I mean, there's so many things in life, guys, that nothing's perfect. People are sensitive. People overreact. Just let it be. Like, I'm not saying anybody should get hurt. I'm not trying to get anybody hurt. But I mean, you take it away. I mean, we got to take a break. But when umpires like somebody gets hit with a pitch and then we start, you know, the other guy can't, you know, there's no way to come back from it. When you get tossed out of the, I don't know. We've gone off the tracks here.
Woo!
Is the show almost over? We have 5 minutes left.
Yeah, we're going to be tight.
Let me just tell you one thing. I love me some Superb Cupcakes in Williston. They're the best. Take a quick break. We'll be right back.
I hate to say it, but the show is almost over. But before we go, we'll get the Brass Monkeys bumping and get you ready for your sports weekend. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
We got to be real quick. Bobby Krivitsky, great job from Boston. We may not agree, but I love you, kiddo. Good luck with everything. We'll have you on again. Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend. We're Sports Saturday. See you next week.